The board of directors of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has legally opposed the trademark application for the name, Issues, etc., and through its legal counsel has threatened to bring legal action against Jeff Schwarz and me. Please sign a new online petition asking the LCMS board of directors to drop its opposition to the trademark and its threat of legal action against us. You'll find a link to this petition at the top of the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support.
Are you done having children?
100%. 200, 300, 400%. Yes, I'm done. This happened for a reason. This is actually a message, I believe, from God saying, you are done. It's more than doubled the family size. So now I have to really, really realize that, this has to, it's done. It's done.
Well, you've heard a lot about her, Nadia Suleiman. Now mother of 14, all 14, I believe, by in vitro fertilization, and the last eight, all at once, octuplets. She's called irresponsible. We're going to be talking in just a few minutes with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris about this California woman, unemployed, no husband or father in the picture, gave birth to octuplets via in vitro fertilization. Of course, then the media started to pay attention. Greetings and welcome to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Jennifer Roback Morse, we'll be talking with Bishop David Swadee, head of the Lutheran Church of Southern Africa, about Christianity in Southern Africa, and interesting questions to ask him about Christianity in South Africa, that is, before and after apartheid. And then we'll be talking with Greg Kokel, rounding off today's program and this daily series with him. Conclusion of our five-part daily series on discussing your Christian convictions today, two tactics that he suggests you use while discussing those convictions. One is called Rhodes Scholar. You got to know when to recognize someone is appealing to diffuse authority. And then the other one's called Just the Facts, Ma'am. Our call-in number 1-877-762-3694-3, live this Friday afternoon, February the 20th. And our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular guest, founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jen, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Yeah, the term here, smart sex, is perhaps the one that causes a bit of chuckles here. This young woman has, in the minds of many, irresponsibly made a mess of her life. It is a mess. Where do you begin on this one?
Well, first of all, we can begin with the fact that way back when the sexual revolution happened and we first got the pill, we were all very excited because we thought, gosh, we're going to get to have sex without having babies. And now we find we have come full circle and we're able to have babies without having sex, which is just wrong. You know, there's something wrong with that. This woman has 14 children. She's never had sex with the father of any of these children. It's quite astonishing when you think about it. The severance between sex and procreation is now complete, and it really is kind of a mess what she's done here.
Okay, she's being called irresponsible in the media. When I talked about this earlier, I said, look, she's being called irresponsible for the wrong reason. They're saying she's irresponsible because she kept these embryos that turned eventually into the octuplets. What are your thoughts there?
Well, you know, in a sense, the proximate motivation that she had here was that she didn't want her little embryos to live in a frozen can forever. And I think actually that is a wholesome motivation on a woman's part. If you think about it, when a woman conceives a child, we want to keep that child under our heart. We want to keep it warm and nurtured and taking care of it, at least until it's born. And some would argue we want to take care of that little child and keep her under our heart until she's the age of 23 and finished with college. You know, I mean, it's that's the mother's natural impulse, is to want to take care of her child. And so what we've done with the whole artificial reproductive technology industry requires us to take our children out from under our hearts and put them in a little can and freeze them, you know, and leave them on the shelf indefinitely. And to me, her impulse to not want that is actually a wholesome thing. Now, what she did about it and how the babies got there in the first place, of course, All of that is completely morally confused. In fact, that's why it's a moral nightmare. That's why it's such a landmine, because they should never have been created in that way in the first place. But there they are. And the vast majority of people who use the IVF treatment blind themselves or shut their eyes to the fate of those extra embryos most of the time. People don't want to think too carefully or too closely about what those babies are doing on the shelf and what's going to happen to them.
Let's talk about, in terms of this is kind of a perfect storm. She is unemployed. I almost said husband, but it's not a husband. It is a father that, depending on who you're listening to in the accounts on the news, is either completely out of her life or, for all practical purposes, completely out of her and the children's life. What are your thoughts there?
One of the odd things, it's a little complicated because he's a known sperm donor, okay? But let's say he were an anonymous sperm donor, which this case could have just as well been a case of anonymous sperm donation, okay? When you have an anonymous sperm donor, we need to think through what that actually means. What the law does in that case is the law permits the child to be completely severed from their father, that the child will never know their father, the child will have no relationship with the father, the mother has no claim against the father, the child has no claim against the father. And so you have this complete separation of a child from one of his natural parents, and it's a separation which is created and orchestrated by the state and which could never happen in the absence of the state. You see, you couldn't artificially make something like that happen, you know, make a separation so complete and so profound, unless there was a legal institution created by the state to perform that function. And that, I think, is appalling, actually, that the state should cooperate in such a great injustice against the child and the interests of the child. And I think that this is a perfect opportunity, actually, Todd, for people to begin rethinking what it is we've done with the whole revolution in not only reproductive technology, but in sex itself. By separating procreation from sexual activity in the profound way that we've done, we've lost sight of the fact that children have some entitlements here. And one of the things they're entitled to is to the care and the love and the attention and the relationship with both of their parents. That is something that is owed to the child. And there are times when it doesn't happen, but these particular cases of IVF and anonymous sperm donorship, these are cases where the child will never have the opportunity, where it wasn't some unavoidable tragedy, where the tragedy was created and manufactured by the parents in cooperation with the state from the very beginning. And I think it's time to really think hard about what we're doing and why we're doing it. I mean, why should she, and how did we get here? Because we have the idea that anybody's entitled to any reproductive outcome that they want, you know, and why do we think such a thing? How did we get there, you know? So it requires us to kind of retrace our steps and think about what have we done here? What have we created in this whole pattern that we've gotten into?
Okay, so we've only got about a minute and a half here, Jen. I obviously cannot ask you to give a prescription for this woman's future with 14 children on her hands, but she does have 14 children, and she seems to love every single one of them. What does society do about this particular case?
Well, you know what? Society needs to stick with the contract, whatever contract it made with her in the first place. I mean, does she have disability payments coming? I don't know whether she's still entitled to that. Society does nothing. I mean, she made these babies. She needs to take care of them. She needs to figure out how she's going to take care of them. And we don't need new welfare rules. We don't need to take the babies away from her automatically because she has a lot of them. You know, that doesn't make any sense. But I think where we need to, I think basically what we need to do with her is leave her on her own. And her mom and dad, I think, have been fed up with her completely. If I read the accounts correctly, her mom's just completely had it because she had been counting on her parents. But the case really does show that the single mother really can't do it all alone. We really are counting on institutions surrounding the single mother to support her, to allow her to do what she's trying to do. And in Nadia's case, it was her parents plus some combination of payments from the state. But it needn't be just those things. It's also your daycare provider and your employer and all of these sort of impersonal commercial institutions that don't have any commitment to you or your child, that don't have any commitment to you as persons. And that's the virtue of marriage as the context in which to raise children, because in marriage you do have a personal relationship between the mother, the father, and the child. They do have at least every reason and motivation to be concerned about the welfare of that child and to cooperate with one another. And that's what we need. We need the personal relationships, not simply the bureaucratic and financial relationships.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the book, Smart Sex and Love in Economics. We will have a link posted to Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse and the Ruth Institute under the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. Jen, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you.
After the break, Bishop David Swade is going to join us. We'll talk with him about Christianity in Southern Africa. He's head of the Lutheran Church of Southern Africa. And then we conclude our five-part daily series with Greg Kokel discussing your Christian convictions today. Rhodes Scholar and Just the Facts, Ma'am, that's coming up here right after this break. Go to our website tonight, issuesetc.org. You'll find the cover of our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February called He Was Crucified, issuesetc.org. This is a great book for Lent, but it's for year-round because we preach Christ and Him crucified perennially, all the time, all year round. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. The book is called He Was Crucified. You'll find it on our homepage, or you can call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February, He Was Crucified. When we come back, Christianity in Southern Africa.
It's a portrait of the happiness that we feel and always will. Oh, it is enough to fill our lives with love.
Ah, the sounds of rich liturgy and historic Christian worship. What a way to spend a Sunday morning. At Trinity Lutheran Church in Millstadt, Illinois, you'll find authentic Christianity as you hear the preaching of Christ crucified for the forgiveness of your sins. Come, join us Sunday mornings at 9 and Monday evenings at 7:30, and find out more about Trinity Lutheran Church, Millstadt, Illinois, at trinitymillstadt.org.
The Board of Directors of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has legally opposed the trademark application for the name Issues Etc. and, through its legal counsel, has threatened to bring legal action against Jeff Schwarz and me. Please sign a new online petition asking the LCMS Board of Directors to drop its opposition to the trademark and its threat of legal action against us. You'll find a link to this petition at the top of the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org. Thanks for your support.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
What are the political prospects for the pro-life movement?
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Now that abortion advocates control both the White House and Congress, many pro-lifers are wondering about the future. A recent study by Election Data Services seems to indicate prospects are good. The report predicts that states where pro-lifers do well politically will gain more seats in Congress during the reapportionment process after the 2010 census. According to the report, Texas should gain 3 seats in Congress, and Arizona, Florida, Georgia, and Utah should each gain 1. A number of pro-abortion states, including New York, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, should each lose at least 1 seat.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.